Greetings, everyone. Carl Eisen here. I'd like to welcome you to Mindful Aviator Audio. I'm accompanied by my brother, Eric, who also practices mindfulness meditation and has what I'd consider a face that's perfect for podcasts. Say hello, Eric.
Hello, Eric.
And today we'll be interviewing Dave O'Connell, or as I like to call him, Super Dave. We'll be talking about his journey into mindfulness meditation, pain management, and more. Welcome, Dave, and thanks for agreeing to do this interview.
Good morning.
When I first met Dave 20 years ago, he had a 500 horsepower, 200 mile per hour Lincoln Felter Corvette, which was quite a nice toy. And I'm bringing this up because, Dave, you're not just a gearhead with cars, you're a tech nerd as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Dave has been my go-to tech support guy pretty much since I first met him. And then back in 2009, I had to return an external DVD drive for my laptop. I bought it online from Tiger Direct, and it wasn't compatible with my computer. So, Dave, you suggested that I return it to the retail store CompUSA, which is a retail store that's owned by Tiger Direct. And we decided that the two of us would meet there in the parking lot and go in and return it together, and it gave us a chance to meet up and hang out for a little bit during that day. We weren't able to actually return that unit, so it turned out to be a wasted trip, right?
Yeah, wasted in that aspect, but it saved my life.
Yeah, so why don't you go ahead and tell us about what happened after after our meeting at CompUSA?
After we had left, started to sweat. Never happened before, but I thought, well, I'll go ahead and go home. And on my way home, I had this feeling come over me to go to the hospital. Never had that feeling. I meant like voice talking to you, go to the hospital. And I thought, yeah. Well, I drove probably another mile down the road and it hit me again. Go to the hospital now. So I turned around, jumped the median that was in the middle of the road and headed back because the hospital was roughly 2 miles from where I was at. And as I'm driving down, and this is one of the busiest intersections in town, I remember pulling up to the intersection. I knew the light was red. And the next thing I know, I have an EMS guy looking over me going, how long have you had a bad heart? And I says, I don't have a bad heart. And he looked at me and says, yeah. He says, I just started it. And he shows me the little electric prongs that he had poked me with. And as I started to come to and realize, I'm upside down in the middle of this intersection.
Quite an accident. I remember seeing the images of that. That was tough.
Boy, was it ever. Changed my life.
So it turns out that you had had a massive heart attack. You were upside down in the car. And as I understand it, the fact that you were upside down may have helped keep you alive because your heart had stopped and being upside down kept the blood into your head. Is that?
Yeah, that's like what they said.
Which is absolutely amazing that, you know, you're here. And that's one of the reasons we call him Super Dave. But anyway, so there's the period of recovery and there is the diagnosis with the crushed neck and spine.
I got three vertebrae in my back and one in my neck that they can't repair because of my bad heart. Nobody wants to take the chance on doing surgery.
Yeah. So it's inoperable and needless to say, extremely painful. You know, even when I was back then visiting you, every once in a while I could see all of a sudden the color would drain out of your face. You'd start sweating. And I'm like, oh my God, I could feel myself and just sense how much pain you were in. It was just heart-wrenching to watch.
Yeah, the hospital's version was just put him on morphine and turn him loose.
So what happened with the period from then until up until 2017 with the treatment with the opioid drugs and everything else?
They were perfectly content to keep me doped up. I meant they were doing what they thought was best for me, trying to keep me as comfortable as they possibly could. The downside of the drugs was you lost the day. I found that to be the hardest thing, that while you were somewhat pain free. You're never pain-free, but you lost all sense of the day. You couldn't remember what you did the day before, nor could you remember what you'd done earlier that day.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that over the years, you were less and less present. You and I would have a conversation, and then you would have the same conversation again, you know, later in the same discussion or the next day. It's as though your mind would just, it wasn't there, and you would repeat yourself and things like that.
Yeah, you were one of the few people that were honest enough to say, hey, there's a problem here. The people that you thought you were friends just thought, you know, hey, I understand the situation he's in. I'll just leave it alone. But that really wasn't what I needed at the time.
Well, over those years, there were several times that I tried to get you interested in meditation, and I tried to direct you to audio recordings and things like that, but it didn't quite take.
No, I mean, it wasn't like you didn't try. I mean, you bought me there kicking, pinching, and dragging. But the thing that started to work was the Headspace. When you turned me on the Headspace, I told you at that time, here's something that I thought somewhat covered where I wanted to go, but just wasn't there.
Right. So then we fast forward to, I think it was towards the end of 2016, and you were having stomach problems.
Yeah.
And basically the heavy doses of drugs that you were taking were destroying your stomach. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just the side effects of the heart medicine along with all the muscle relaxants, pain pills that they had you on. It was just creating a mess.
I'm curious, Dave, this is Eric. The opiates, the morphine and whatnot, was all about the pain management, and basically the medical profession was just sort of feeling, all right, you're gonna, you know, as long as you're hurting, you're gonna be on the opiates.
Yeah, I meant they were doing everything within their abilities to help me out. Yeah, the typical things from any kind of opiates, you start getting constipated. Then they wanted to give me pills for the constipation. And each side effect, they offered another pill, and it just kept escalating from that point to where I just said, you know, stop. I'm done.
This gets into another Super Dave story here. You got to a point where you just said enough, and you decided that you were going to wean yourself off the drugs, the pain pills.
Yeah, by myself.
By yourself, which is, shall we say, not easy. And you succeeded in doing it in about a month, is that correct?
Yeah, a little over a month. What I did is instead of taking one a day, or actually I was up at six a day, I weaned it down to four a day, to three a day, to two a day, to one a day, one every other day. And when I went in to see the doctor at my five-week visit, he asked me how I was doing, and I says, hey, I'm doing better. I says, I'm off of the morphine. And he looked horrified. He says, what? And I says, yeah. I says, I'm completely drug-free of the morphine. And he says, what are we going to do? And I says, nothing for the next 30 days. I says, I want to be drug-free for 30 days and see how it affects my life. If I can't go on, then I'll go back. But if I can survive the next 30 days, then I can survive the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. Now, it was around that time that I was finishing up the recordings for the six-week mindfulness meditation program that I developed for pilots, and I invited you to be in the beta test group, the first group of pilots who participated in that six-week program. If you don't mind, can you tell me what your experience was of that?
It was eye-opening.
This was your first dive into mindfulness and meditation after using the Headspace app, correct?
Yeah, this was leaps and bounds above what I was getting from Headspace.
What did you learn from meditation in dealing with pain?
Well, the biggest thing was being able to control not just the pain, but the way the pain affected me mentally. The pain is always going to be there. It's how you react to it that'll change your life.
And You've had a regular mindfulness meditation practice since. That was 2016, end of 2016, beginning of 2017.
Yeah. I do a couple mile walk every day, and this is what I listen to during my walks. It's the constant reminders of the thought processes that you've got to use to control what you're thinking. It's okay to let other things get into your mind while you're meditating. It's the understanding that those thoughts are there and to be able to stop them.
So you've talked to me a little bit also about how it changed your relationship to the world around you when you're out for a walk. Can you describe that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, the biggest thing is when you're in that zone, all of a sudden it's like somebody turns up the volume of the world. You start to hear birds chirp. And not only do the birds chirp, you hear multiple birds chirp, different types of birds chirp. And that's something that you never hear. You're too busy within your mind of everything else. This is all going by you and you don't realize it.
So it changes your relationship with many things, not just with stress and pain, but with what it's like to be in a world.
Yeah, my walks take about an hour. And during that hour, I can come back and I'm relaxed. I'm in a much better mood, more controllable, and my mind's happier.
A lot of people practice mindfulness and meditation with a formal sitting practice. And a lot of people say that this is really necessary to have a regular sitting practice in order to be able to gain the benefits from mindfulness and meditation. But you don't really have a regular formal sitting meditation practice, do you?
No, not at all. No. I'm probably the oddball as usual. I find my relaxing period my walks. Always has been. I worked out all of my problems while walking. The answers always seem to come to me.
Yeah. Something that a lot of people misinterpret is, you know, that you have to have this formal sitting practice in order to succeed with mindfulness and meditation. And that's not true. You can practice mindfulness and meditation when you're walking, when you're sitting. There are forms of meditation you can do while you're even driving, things like that. The important thing is the process of getting untangled from your thinking and being present for what's actually going on. And this is something that Dave, you know, my experience with Dave has really reinforced for me. As a meditation teacher, I always tended to want to direct people towards this formal sitting practice. And what I've found from Dave and what I've found from a lot of other pilots is that they're not so interested in the regular formal sitting practice, but they are able to do practices in the real world where they're bringing themselves back over and over and over again, and they have good success with that. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, you know, it a lot of it still pertains to the formal part of it. When my pain is at its most extreme, I still go back and count my breaths. So that's, you know, that's the very beginning. But it helps me get past that. And I tell myself, you know, hey, if I just went to 10 and I was able to control the pain, I'll do it again. And then I'll do it again. And the next thing I realize, I've gone a half an hour without letting that pain control my life.
If you were going to give someone advice, someone who's dealing with chronic pain issues, what advice would you give them about beginning a mindfulness practice?
Don't expect it to change your life overnight. Geez, I think it was like realistically 6 to 8 years that you kept harping on me about this program. And I listened to you because we're friends until we hit that one day where you just said this and it rang a bell. And it takes that light bulb going off to get you to the next level.
You actually have to practice something that's counterintuitive for a little while before it starts to make sense and before you start to realize any real benefit from it. And then all of a sudden, as you say, the light bulb goes off and you go, okay, I get it now. But there's a period of time where you just kind of have to have faith in it and say, okay, I'm going to try it for a while. And I realize that I may not get a benefit from it right away, but stay with it, right?
Yeah. You know, I love the analogy that you use of sitting on a riverbank watching the riverboat come by. And that just makes so much sense on so many levels. You can visualize sitting underneath that tree, enjoying the day.
So we're talking about our own relationship to our thoughts. In mindfulness and meditation practice, we go through a process where we kind of get untangled from our thoughts and our thinking. And in that process of getting untangled from our thinking, we're using our awareness to kind of observe the thinking instead of being tangled up in the thinking. And when you think about it, you know, it's a lot of the stories that we have about pain, stories that we have about stress, stories we have about our situations that create this proliferation of thinking that we get tangled up in. And we describe that as though you're sitting on a riverbank and you're trying to focus on your breath, or you're trying to focus on what's going on in your direct experience, and thoughts are going by like boats just floating past on the river. And then all of a sudden, a very, very interesting boat comes by, and you suddenly realize that you're on the boat and you're in the story, and you've been in the story for a long time, and it's taking you here and it's taking you there, and it's stressing you out, and it amplifies the pain and things like that. And then you realize, oh, I'm on the boat. And you go back to your metaphorical riverbank, and you sit and you watch the thoughts coming and going. And as long as you're watching and observing the thoughts coming and going and not tangled up with them, things like pain and stress and other things become much more manageable.
And I like your analogy of a story. For me, it was all of the failures that I wasn't being able to do because of the accident. Once you understand that's the past, leave it alone. Regurgitating it gets you nowhere. And when you start to control that, it adds to your experience of happiness today.
Yeah, yeah, it's an amazing process. I came to this through stress management was what brought me to mindfulness and meditation. And it's all similar with pain and stress and with our anxieties and worries and projecting into the future and rehashing the past and all these things. If we just can get ourselves a little bit untangled from it, it changes everything.
Yeah, It's eye-opening. It will change your life. It'll make you a happier, better, more productive person.
Yeah, one of the experiences I think around pain is that when there's chronic pain, we're not just in pain. It's as though we are pain, and it becomes our entire experience. And I like there's a mathematical formula that we refer to, and that is suffering equals pain times resistance. And the more that we're resisting it, the more that we're hating it, the more that we're trying to push it out of our experience, the more it turns up the volume on the experience of pain. And so when we can get untangled from that process, we can turn the volume back down.
Yeah, I mean, face the pain. Don't run away from it. Try to figure out, where is it? Where is it originating? Can you move it? And the more you play with it, you suddenly lower the pain. I mean, people think that's nuts, but it actually does work that way.
Yeah, and there's some science that backs that up too. You know, there's the physical pain that's happening in our body. That's sending a message to actually a specific region in our brain. And then we have the stories or the experience that we have of the pain. So there's the physical component, there's the brain that's receiving the information, and then there's the story that we're telling ourselves about the pain. So if I don't like getting shots, for example, I can get myself completely worked up. I took my son to get a shot one time when he was young, and it took three people to hold him down. And when he got the shot, he didn't even feel it. So what was worse, the shot or the story he was telling himself about the shot? So in our mindfulness experience, what happens is we start by untangling our awareness from the story we're telling ourselves, and then it turns the volume down in the part of the brain that is receiving that information. Over time, as you practice more and more, the region of the brain that's receiving the pain signal, that's receiving the physical pain signal, actually gets smaller. That part of the brain actually shrinks and is measurable with MRI technology. You can see that the person's experience of pain is being changed by physical changes in the brain. So you're rewiring your brain by the way that you're using it. And that physically changes the way that you experience pain, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm just amazed on how much you can control what's happening in your life by your thoughts.
Right.
Eric here. Dave, let me get a real clear, no holds barred reading on how bad did your pain get?
On a scale of 1 to 10, it was a 25 all day long.
And where's it hurting and how? What's it doing? What's it feel like?
My problem wasn't so much the damage to the disc. It was the damage to the nerve roots. So I would have constant muscle spasms to the point where I still have lumps in my back. And it isn't so much the pain, it's the muscle spasms. I can't sit, as you guys, you know, we've gone to concerts and dinner. If I sit in any one position for about an hour, I'll start changing colors. Then, you know, I'm gritting my teeth, and then I start to sweat.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, the only thing I want to do is lay down. And, you know, stores like Walmart, you know, they kind of cringe when you want to lay down in the aisleway and just, hey, I'll be all right in about 20 minutes. Just put up a couple cones and leave me alone.
Being a traffic hazard, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now when you're experiencing that, okay, is that more tightness? Is that more burning? Is that more, you know, a stabbing kind of a thing? Or what's the...
it's all of those things.
All of those things. So this is intense. This is intense.
Yeah.
Would you still say that when you're in the grips of that kind of pain, that the mental component is how big compared to that?
Oh, it's still huge, but I'm able to cope with it. I'm in control. It's not.
So it's a change of perspective. Tell me more about that, about you changing your own perspective that way.
I didn't know what the end result was going to be to quit.
To quit the opiates.
Yeah. When I talked to people, the consensus was you were damaged goods. Get used to this. This is going to be the rest of your life. And if you're going to live the rest of your life not remembering the day or the people that you talk to, you're not living your life. So my thoughts were, if I could try to go without the pills and see what the results were after that, because even taking the pills at the quantities I was still in massive amounts of pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would think with morphine, you could stick a knife in your back and go to work.
Uh-huh.
And nothing could be further from the truth.
Well, of course, and part of that is that you need ever-increasing amounts to get the same effect.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this is, you know, I mean, this is really, for me, the heart of this story is that you absolutely stopped the opiates. You're taking none now.
No pain pills, no muscle relaxers, no nothing, just my heart medicine.
But your relationship to the pain is radically different than it was before.
The pain, like I said, is still there.
Yeah.
That part just doesn't stop.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm in control of the day. I understand what I'm doing. And I have to adjust my day accordingly, but I'm aware of everything I do during that day.
Yeah. Now, here's two things that have come up in our talk here. One of the things that came up was, well, get to a happier place, think about something else. That's one way we've looked at it. Another way we've looked at it is turning toward the pain, letting yourself be open to it, and being curious about it. Now, let me have you speak to those ideas.
Well, you know, when you have pain, if you can try to center it, where is it coming from? Is it vibrating to a different area? Is it centrally located? Can you move around and control the amount of pain that you're getting from that spot? Rather than just sitting in one spot and suffering, try different positions and see, you know, how does that change the pain?
Now what about the idea of you know, opening yourself up to what's happening as opposed to resisting or being resistant to it? What is that like in your experience?
To me, the biggest thing is just not letting it control everything you do, because, you know, you can get up in the morning. The last thing that I want to do is go for a walk. I mean, I really don't. Because that hour, hour and a half of walking will mean anywhere from three and a half hours of laying on the bed just vibrating because the pain level's so high. But I've got it down to now that after that, I'm back up and moving again. So while I lose maybe 2-3 hours of quality time, I'm still able to read, watch TV, do other things that I wasn't able to do before. Those days were just gone.
So Carl back here again. So from a mindfulness perspective, when we're dealing with people who have chronic pain, we have two primary strategies when it comes to redirecting awareness and dealing with the pain. One of them is to bring your awareness to a place in your body where there isn't pain. So you develop a capacity to focus, not so much push away the pain, but to focus on an area in your body where the pain, where there is no pain or the pain is minimal. So that's one approach. The other approach is that we bring our awareness directly to the experience of the pain. And it sounds counterintuitive, but it actually works, because what you're doing it by bringing your awareness to the pain, directly to it, you start to get curious about it. You start to be interested. What's it actually doing? And as Dave said, if I move a little bit, does it change the intensity? If you're experiencing pain as this singular, awful, horrible thing in your experience, you don't know the subtleties of what's going on. You don't know that, you know what, if I lift my shoulder 2 inches, the pain goes down 20% or something like that. So you start to tune into what's going on in the experience. And this is another way of turning down the volume. Now, people will say, well, I came to mindfulness and meditation to reduce pain, and the first thing you're telling me to do is focus on my pain. That's insane. But actually, it does work. You have to have a little bit of faith in it. And if it's just too painful, then we teach you to mindfully be aware of a place in your body that doesn't hurt. Does that sound true to you, Dave?
Yeah, I think that just the basics, when, you know, you start counting your breaths, when you breathe in on one and out on two, and you're just going to 10. But in your mind, if you're paying attention, you realize at the end when you hit 10, you just did 10 seconds of no thoughts of pain. And now you can build on that, where before you didn't realize you had that capacity.
That's fantastic, Dave. Anything else that you'd like to add for our listeners out there?
No, just, that I was a hard-nosed non-believer, and, you know, now I'm doing commercials.
There you go. Yeah, I certainly came to this with a lot of skepticism. I think skepticism is fine. I had a lot of misconceptions about it, and I put it in the category of touchy-feely, fuzzy, woo-woo kind of stuff. But when your suffering gets to a certain point and you need relief, you're willing to try some different things. And thank goodness that you and I both found this.
Yeah, in my life, it literally changed my life to what I've got today. It saved my life.
Fantastic. Again, a big thanks to Super Dave. I think this interview will really help some people understand the value of mindfulness for pain and stress management. For our pilots out there who are interested in a free introduction to mindfulness, go to our website, mindfulaviator.com, and check out the homepage for a 10-part series of 10-minute audio recordings custom-tailored for pilots. For our non-pilot listeners, go to the resources page, audio recordings, and scroll down to the section, local community and non-pilot audio recordings. You'll find a separate 10-part series that doesn't use quite so much pilot jargon. I hope you found this talk useful. Thanks for listening. You can get more information by contacting us through the Mindful Aviator website.